This is Radio Superior 1941, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1941. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
Broadcasting from the land of beautiful lakes, this is Station KUWS. Your friendly neighborhood announcer, Jack McKenna, speaking. It's a swinging Saturday night, folks, July 26, 1941, and Lou Martin is standing by with the 6 o'clock news. And there's a stunning development with Japan. Rapid Ray will be in with the sports, and we have a story about finding gold coins hidden years ago around Spooner, Wisconsin, and now turning up. Harriet is in with community news, and we've got the best doggone music for your Saturday night. Tonight's news is brought to you by Firestone. Get a brake adjustment and repair for $1.19 at Firestone Auto Supply at 14th and Ogden. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. The United States has frozen Japanese assets, and Japan has retaliated by doing the same to the U.S. We begin our shortwave world roundup today from Tokyo.
This is Tokyo, Daryl Berrigan reporting. The Japanese government today ordered the freezing of the United States funds in this country. President Roosevelt's decree immobilizing $131 million of Japanese money and property in the United States was relayed by U.S. Ambassador Joseph Grew in Tokyo with the knowledge that Japan would retaliate. Mr. Roosevelt's action was a quick response to Japan's move to assume military control of French Indochina, including taking Saigon. Acting Secretary of State Sumner Wells has denounced Japan's action as a menace to peace in the Pacific and declared it endangered American territory in the Philippines. This retaliatory order freezes $217 million in American assets in the Japanese Empire. This amount would be materially increased if the freeze also applied to Manchukuo and Japanese-occupied China. An estimated 4,400 American citizens are in Japan now. An estimated 6,000 are in China, occupied by Japanese forces in the puppet government of Nanking. In Tokyo, this is your correspondent, Daryl Berrigan, calling America. Come in, Washington.
This is the nation's capital, Hightower here. The United States assumed the offensive today in the economic war against the Axis in the South Pacific. President Roosevelt has ordered the freezing of all Japanese assets and restricting all exports to Japan, which could be used in a war against Singapore or the Dutch East Indies. Britain has also announced it will end trade treaties with Japan. Presidential Press Secretary Stephen Early says the effect of cutting trade with Japan will be only slight on the U.S. economy, since trade has been diminishing for months. U.S. firms' hardest hit will be Otis Elevator, oil companies, General Electric, National City Bank, National Cash Register, British American Tobacco, and film companies. This drastic action follows months, if not years, of wrangling over Japanese aggression in China, Indochina, and threats to India, Singapore, the Philippines, and Burma. In Washington, this is John Hightower, calling to New York State. Come in, Lyle C. Wilson.
This is Lyle C. Wilson with the president at his home in Hyde Park. President Roosevelt called into the armed services of the United States all of the organized military forces of the Philippine government today. There was no immediate explanation for this, but it is generally regarded as another indication of the United States' displeasure with Japan's southward moves in the Pacific, including the Japanese occupation of southern Indochina. The Philippine military is to be put under the charge of American General Douglas MacArthur, who is in charge of the Philippines. It is expected that General George C. Marshall, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, would explain this action at a press conference later this week. Acting Secretary of State Sumner Wells says Japan's taking of naval and air bases in Indochina are an indication of its intent to continue conquest of adjacent areas. With the President in Hyde Park, this is Lyle C. Wilson reporting. Calling Soviet Russia, come in Moscow.
This is Moscow, Eddie Gilmore reporting. The Red Army reports they have stopped the second German offensive of the war at Kiev and Moscow fronts. They also say the Nazis have suffered terrific losses in a vain attempt to restart their blitzkrieg. The afternoon war communique reported ferocious fighting throughout the night along the Moscow and Kiev fronts. The Soviets insist the Germans are taking heavy losses even as they throw fresh troops into battle. It is the fifth week of battle since Germany launched its invasion of the Soviet Union. Up until these reports, the Nazi panzer divisions and Luftwaffe have made consistent gains, which initially were denied by Moscow. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore calling Germany. Come in, Berlin.
This is the Third Reich, Max Jordan reporting. The German High Command reports today that a massive counteroffensive has been launched by the Red Army. They also admit that bad weather and poor roads are hampering their push eastward toward Leningrad, Stalingrad, and Moscow. The official communique reveals that the Russians have massed powerful reserve forces 85 miles northeast of Smolensk on the road to Moscow. The High Command claimed, however, that the Soviet counterattack has been beaten back by German forces with heavy losses by the Red Army. Nazi forces are within 100 miles of Leningrad and are continuing a rapid advance toward Moscow. In Berlin, this is Max Jordan. Come in, Vichy France.
This is Vichy, Colonel E.E. Lombard, former military attaché at the French Embassy in Washington. See here. Russia is in desperate straits. I say, they've not been forthwith about the military situation. Not with the world press, nor with their own people. Like it or not, the Nazi pincers are following their own agenda, on schedule, closing in on Leningrad, Moscow, and Kiev. No amount of denials by Joseph Stalin and his gang will change the bold-faced fact that a disaster is in the making for the Red Army. Stalin's emissaries are clamoring in Whitehall for Winston Churchill to give immediate and drastic help to the USSR. And if Stalin can convince the world he's at least holding his own with Hitler, then perhaps those military supplies will be heading his way too sweet. Fellow military attachés of mine say surrender is in sight unless the tremendous pressure exerted on the Soviet front lines by Nazi panzer divisions can be relieved, at least somewhat. By Jove, without that relief, without some miracle, Joe Stalin will be moving his government to Siberia by October. This is your commentator, Colonel E.E. Lombard, reporting from Vichy. We return you now to the States. Over and out.
This just in from Helsinki. Military quarters admitted that the Finnish-German attack on the Russians at the Karelian Peninsula have been slowed. They say that they're progressing, but they're having to fight bunker to bunker as they penetrate deeper into Karelia. Even before the announcement in London that Britain was freezing all Japanese assets, Canadian Prime Minister Mackenzie King took similar action. Mr. Mackenzie King says action has been taken to prevent the withdrawal of assets in Canada belonging to residents of Japan. And now this press time news flash just handed to me from French Indochina. Japan began occupying her newly acquired bases in southern Indochina. Japanese naval and army officers are arriving in Saigon from Hanoi. Former Wisconsin Governor Philip La Follette is accusing Interior Secretary Harold Ickes of acting like Hitler. Mr. La Follette told an American First meeting in New York today that Mr. Ickes is acting more like a dictator than a cabinet member. He says Mr. Ickes has been racing around the country like a cranky, cantankerous shrew, scolding and smearing people who are trying to keep America out of the war. He says the taxpayers of the United States never intended to pay a cabinet secretary $15,000 to go around with daily exhibitions of name-calling. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from our sponsor.
Thank you, Lou. Indeed, I do. A message from Firestone. Brake specials are special today, folks. July 28th to August 2nd, inclusive. All work done by factory-trained brakemen. Here's your brake adjustment. This is the way they go about it. Inspect the brakes. Clean and repack front wheels. Take off wheels and inspect the lining. This is all a $3.30 value for just $1.19. Phone 1206 for an appointment. From Firestone Auto Supply and Service Stores. They do the job right.
The U.S. Maritime Administration has rejected bids to build 9 small cargo vessels. Lake Superior Shipbuilding was among the bidders that the government called excessive and unreasonable. Wisconsin's lone air unit is being led by a Spooner man. Lieutenant Albert Pratt is in training with his squadron in Fort Dix, New Jersey. The Billy Mitchell Squadron, named after the famed late prophet of air power, was organized in Milwaukee with men from around Wisconsin. Lieutenant Pratt is the son of Dr. Maud Pratt of Spring Brook in Washburn County. He was an honor student at Shell Lake High School, and he loves fishing and hunting. The Giants are coming, but there's no need to fear. They may be big, but they're friendly, and they're from New York. The National Professional Football League Giants are on the way to Superior to open training camp here next week. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
Superior State Teachers College Athletic Director Ted Werrett just got word that Giants head coach Steve Owen and his staff left New York by train today. Coach Owen will prepare the college facilities for rookies when they arrive August 1st, followed by the rest of the club 1 week later. The entire squad numbers 55, and they'll enjoy the invigorating air of the Lake Superior region instead of the hot climates many other football teams must suffer and battle in their own camps. Nothing like nature's air conditioning from Kichigumi. The Giants boast of exceptional speed this year, including Minnesota All-American halfback George Frank, Fordham's rapid Ram Len Eshmont, and Red McLean of Southern Methodist. The club will stay here until September when they play the annual All-Star game at the Polo Grounds in New York, Lou.
And finally, the patron saint of travelers will be invoked tomorrow by the Reverend Gerald Mahan at the Holy Assumption Catholic Church. The Reverend will use the blessings of St. Christopher for all who bring their cars and bicycles. Reverend Mahan says the blessings will take place after the 7 o'clock and the 9 o'clock masses. St. Christopher died in the 3rd century and is ranked as one of the most popular of the 14 holy helpers.
You want to know how I keep my old Bessie running, Lou? Now you know. We never miss Father Mahan's blessing.
Well, say no more. I believe in miracles. The good reverend does warn that the blessings won't make cars immune from accidents or breakdowns, but he says invoking the saint's protection is an aid to safer driving.
Hallelujah, Brother Martin. Our weather has been warm, folks, no doubt about that, but not as warm as most other places away from Lake Superior. It's been 90 degrees in Hayward and Spooner, but 85 in Superior, near 100 in Milwaukee and Chicago. Whew. So the forecast for this Saturday night, July the 26th, 1941, calls for partly clear skies tonight and a low of just 63. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a possible sprinkle in the afternoon and the high again about 85. We've got some cool numbers for you tonight, folks. Let's kick it off with an oldie from our wax recordings. This is Billy Murray. And If You Knew Susie, on the Martin and McKenna Show. We'll be right back.
Queens of Shakespeare, she's a wow. Wow! So all of you may know her too. I'd like to shout right now. If you knew Susie like I know Susie. Oh, 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 what a girl. So she gets sassy, I'll say she's classy. Oh, oh, you can bet I love this lassie. We went riding, she didn't fall. Back to the city, I'm the one that had to walk. If you knew Susie like I know Susie. Oh, oh, what a girl.
Billy Murray, folks, a big hit for him from the Roaring Twenties on station KUWS. Hey, friends, come one, come all to the new General Motors Parade of Progress Exposition tonight at Leif Erickson Park on Duluth's waterfront. See the Frigitherm, the talking flashlight, the future of plastics, and preview modern appliances that will be in the homes of 19 and 60. All fun, all free. That's tonight at 7 o'clock until 10 at Leif Erickson Park. And tomorrow afternoon from 2 until 10 p.m. And here's something for that Sunday afternoon drive on warm summer days. Stop by Bridgman's Ice Cream. They'll package your ice creams and sherbets in dry ice on Sundays only. For just 10 cents at Bridgman's on Belknap and Grand in Superior. Hey, that's a neat deal, folks. And up next, it's the Spooner Gold Rush, and always free, and many times cool, are the swinging sounds right here. Let's listen to Eddie Condon and his Windy City 7, and Love is Just Around the Corner, on the Martin and McKenna Show. We've just enjoyed the cool sound of Eddie Condon and his Windy City 7, and Love is Just Around the Corner on Station KUWS. Hi, Lou. So you got your own interview today?
Yes, I prefer it that way. No surprises, no tall tales. Let me introduce Pat Hardy of Oakland Township. He's a retired railroad man who's in the know about gold coins found there.
Well, it was in the summer of 87. I never forget a date, boy. Times were good. Grover Cleveland was in the White House.
But you are in the know about the gold coins.
Oh,
right?
Look, Sonny. We old-timers got more on the ball than that. 87 was the year distinguished Wisconsin conservationist Aldo Leopold was born. And it was also the year that mighty Dan Casey struck out for the New York Giants. Yep. You know, they didn't even write the poem about mighty Casey until the next year. A feller named Ernie Thayer took his sweet time with that, he did.
Sometimes it takes some people a long time to get around to doing things. So, Mr. Hardy, I understand that people have found 14 gold coins around the Spooner Rail Yard.
Well, I was wondering when you'd be getting to the point of my visit. Gather the kiddies around now, moms and dads. Old Pat Hardy has a story. And when you hear my story, Spooner will probably be an honest-to-goodness gold rush town. Well, I was working as a switchman at the Omaha Yards in the summer of 87. Denny McGuire was a fireman, Mike Murphy the engineer. For about a month, the whole gang noticed that old Denny McGuire was acting queer. He was batching it in an old shack west of Hart's Restaurant on what was then the main street of Spooner. I guess living alone began to get to him. You live alone there, Mr. Martin?
Yes, I do.
Kinda figured. He's been acting peculiar, Mr. McKenna.
Now that you mention it,
What do you mean by that?
He gets kinda testy real easy-like, huh?
Well, now that you mention it...
Mr. Hardy, please... Gold coins.
Well, Denny got to complaining that people were trying to steal his money. He was a real saver, you know. Cheap. He didn't like to spend money. We figured he probably had near $1,000 stashed away. And then one day, and I swear every word of this is the gospel truth, it all came to a head. Denny and Mike and me stopped for water. While we were in the engine cab, Denny suddenly said, "Nobody's going to get their hands on my money now. I've got it fixed so they don't." Then he climbed up to let the spout from the tank. When he got back down, you know, he always said banks were no good, and they weren't that back then, I guess. I noticed him reach into the seat box. Well, sir, the action got pretty fast and furious then. Then he whipped out a gun, and he pointed it right at me. Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't think the day would come when I'd be here at the ripe old age of 76. He yells at me, he says, "I'm tired of you pestering me for my money. You've been trying to rob me, Pat. I'm going to kill you."
He said he was going to kill you?
Pointed the gun right at me, he did. Well, sir, I dived out the back of that engine and off the side faster than a jackrabbit. Then he followed me with that gun, but he slipped and fell, so I got a head start. He stood on the platform on the back of the engine, pumped shot after shot at me. Oh, how I did run. Meanwhile, Mike Murphy, the engineer, why, I'm getting choked up just with fear again. He dove out the other side of the car. Then he yelled out for Mike to come back, that he was going to kill that Pat Hardy. Well, then, Mike crawled out from under the engine, tried to soothe the crazy fireman, said, "What did you shoot at Pat for? He ain't trying to steal your money. He wouldn't take it if you gave it to him." Crazy Denny said he didn't think he hit me. And I know darn well he didn't. I don't think those bullets were going as fast as I was.
Well, this tall tale is taking a long time to get around to the gold coins buried in Spooner.
He is pretty cranky, isn't he?
Now that you mention it...
Would you stop saying that?
Well, it's that living alone. It'll make you stir crazy. Anyhow, that night, we got Yardmaster Art Campbell, who was also the deputy sheriff in those parts, and we went to Denny's shack. We cuffed him, and he got shipped off to the insane asylum. Poor old crazy Denny. He died there a short time later. Well, sir, we part near tore down his shack looking for that $1,000. But Denny, he'd done a good job hiding it. Oh, boy, did we look. Even the sheriff was looking. None of us ever found Denny's hoard of gold. We never did think of looking by the tracks. That's where they found those 14 coins. But I know that's not the end of it. Denny didn't drink or carouse. He was miserly. And the railroad, they paid in gold coins back then. You never saw paper money back then. Not like the greenbacks they got now. Well, the fellas, they razzed me pretty good about getting shot at. They said that every time Denny fired, I'd jump up in the air, running and jumping.
So you figure there's still many gold coins around that Omaha Railroad Yard.
Well, the thing I keep thinking of is, but Denny said he'd fix it so that nobody would ever find his gold. I guess he did a good job. That was 54 years ago. Most of it is still hidden somewhere. I expect they'll never find it all. And that's the true story of the Spooner gold coins and crazy Denny McGuire. God rest his soul.
Wow.
You're supposed to say that's 78-year-old Pat Hardy of Oakland, retired railroad man.
Sorry. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hardy.
Well, it's been a pleasure. You watch Lou close now there, Jack. If he starts stashing things...
Now that you mention it, Lou didn't buy lunch today.
Just because I don't buy you lunch doesn't mean that I'm a miser.
On with the music then, friends, for Mr. Hardy. This is the All-Star Jam Band, and for He's a Jolly Good Fellow on the Martin and McKenna Gold Rush Show.
Oh, by golly, he's a jolly good fellow.
Look at the view, look at the view, look at the view, look at the view.
Yes, sir, friends, that's the All-Star Jam Band, and he's a jolly good fellow. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Jake, and good evening, fans of the sporting world. Our hometown heroes, the Superior Blues, made mincemeat out of the Maroons of Winnipeg last night, whacking out hit after hit, terrorizing the three pitchers the Peggers sent in. Hot bats were led by Bob Decker, Blackwell, and Payne. The score was an impressive 16-4 for the home team. Meanwhile, fresh off his incredible 56-game hitting streak, Yanks slugger Joe DiMaggio is chasing the young man from Boston for the league batting crown. Ted Williams is still batting around that 400 mark, while defending batting champ Jolton Joe is at 377. Congratulations from this sportscaster to old man Lefty Grove yesterday. He joined that select group of pitchers to record his 300th win, beating back the snarling Cleveland Indians 10-6. Lefty's famous fireball is long gone, so the crafty veteran has to rely on his smarts and his big heart to get number 300. A big hit by Jimmy Fox saved the day for Lefty. The last pitcher to get 300 wins was Grover Alexander, and he did the trick in the 1920s. Speaking of Grover Cleveland Alexander, the former great has fallen on tough times. He's in Bellevue Hospital in New York. Doctors say gashed his head. He's suffering from alcoholism. They found him lying in the street. Get well, and God bless you, Grover Cleveland Alexander. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
Well said, young man. We've got the time for one more big hit, friends. Here's Bing Crosby's latest, Accentuate the Positive, on the Martin and McKenna Show.
You've got to accentuate the positive, believe, mind it the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between. You've got to spread joy up to the maximum. The drummer dropped his bridge work. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looks so dark? Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, do not mess with Mr. In Between. You've got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch right on to who the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. You've got to spread joy right up to the maximum, bring bloom right down to the minimum, have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch right on to who the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
That's Bing Crosby, and Accentuate the Positive on KUWS.
Hey, what's with Lou? His eyes are kind of far off.
Cold fever, I think.
Oh, you don't think he's going off the deep end, do you?
Well, now that you mention it...
Stop saying that. I'm fine.
Hey, Jack, they don't get any steadier than Lou. He'd be the last guy hunting for gold coins hid by a crazy fireman.
Hey, it's been a while since we've been to Spooner. You know, it wouldn't hurt to get a pick and a shovel and poke around a little. It wouldn't hurt, you know.
Yeah, I'm in.
That's a plan, folks. Stay tuned for What's My Name? One Man's Family. And then a special British Children in the U.S. Talk to Their Parents in England. All coming up tonight. we'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing. And Lou keeps his head about him. For Lou Martin and Ray Paulson, then, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1941, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skorich, John Munson, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1941 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.